I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moe!
Rugby, rugby, weekly.
Little reverse pass. Drive
magic!
Hello, the 42 members. We are nearly there. Welcome to Rugby Weekly Extra. Gavin Casey here in studio in Dublin, joined on the line by Murray Kinsella, who is stood outside the stadium in Tokyo, I do believe. How are you, Murray?
Yeah, all good. Just had Ireland's captain's run here. The All Blacks didn't come out. They were in a hotel kind of in central Tokyo. And Ireland didn't really come out here either. It was just Johnny Sexton and Richie Murphy, the kicking coach. So a slightly different setup. But thankfully now all the press conferences are done and we can look forward to a World Cup quarterfinal tomorrow. It's crazy that it's upon us.
Yeah. What was the thought process behind, I suppose, not sending out a captain first and foremost, but just sending one player in, Johnny Sexton? David Hyland was saying in the WhatsApp group, there's nothing Joe Schmidt hates more than traffic. It would seem that had an influence on his decision this evening.
Yeah, absolutely. The stadium, Tokyo Stadium, is a fair bit outside the central parts of the city, really. And where Ireland are is a fair bit outside the central parts of the city as well, on the opposite side. So really you're talking about an hour and a half even in a car or bus to get across here, and they just felt it's not worth putting the squad into what could be a 3-hour round trip just for a captain's run, which is obviously a very light kind of organizational loosening up. It's not a serious training session, it's just to get those last bits of detail nailed down. So Johnny Sexton decided that he wanted to go and have a look at the stadium. He obviously hasn't played here. He wasn't on that tour in 2017. He wanted to just get his bearings for his place kicking. Joey Carberry has played here before, or been here before rather. So he has a sense of the place, and Conor Murray felt he was okay just tapping over a few at their training over in Tokyo Bay. So yeah, it makes sense not to put everyone into the bus and trek them over. It would have been a lot of effort for a minimal return. They got their session done a little bit earlier in the day. Sexton came over, Richie Murphy took a few kicks. He was very late actually in for the press conference, and everyone, as they tend to on the eve of a big match, started to get a little bit worried when it's 35 minutes, 40 minutes late to kick off and it's Johnny Sexton as well. So there was a couple of worried murmurs going around the room, but he came in and he spoke really well yet again. We've got him twice this week, and that's a real rarity in a test match week for Ireland. They generally don't put him up for media all that often, but he's spoken really well this week. And if you're just listening to his words, as an Ireland fan, you'd be extremely confident that they're going to deliver a big performance tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to do essentially a mailbag with this episode, because obviously there was a comprehensive preview by yourself and Andy Dunn on the regular pod yesterday. And if people haven't tuned in to the extra pods as well, we've been going through the game in fairly excruciating detail over the course of the week, but still loads of questions in the group that need answering. And we're going to start with some of what Joe Schmidt was saying, actually, Murray, about not speaking to Ronan O'Gara for an insight into some of the players he would have been working with at the Crusaders, particularly George Bridge and Sevi Reese, and even Richie Mwanga, who had a fairly funny remark about not being able to understand Rog yesterday. But Quaylon says, seeing as Razzie Erasmus brought in Felix Jones for his knowledge on Ireland, do you think Joe Schmidt should have, at the very least, got in contact with Rog for the inside scoop on the 8 starting Crusaders players, especially Bridge, Reese, and Mwanga? And then Anita says, I was wondering this myself yesterday. She was wondering around the time of the chat that Andy Dunn was having on the regular pod about Reese and Rog's work with him. And she said she would like to think that Joe or even Sexton would have mined him for info. And then Andrew Wood added on this, Joe was very strong in saying he hadn't spoken to Rog this week. I'd be surprised if Sexton, i.e. Joe Mark II, hadn't been having a few chats with Rog over the last few months since he left New Zealand. Like, from a personal standpoint, Murray, I'd be surprised if Joe was actually telling the truth about this.
Yeah, I'd probably be of a similar vein. I'm sure he's had chats with O'Gara over the course of several months, or whenever they've spoken to each other about that. It's been well established from a long way out that Ireland, we're almost certainly going to be playing either the All Blacks or South Africa in a World Cup quarterfinal. So I'm sure he was tracking that all along. And whenever he did catch up with Ronan O'Gara, you would imagine they were discussing players. To be fair, like, Ireland do so much of their own analysis as well, and everyone does so much analysis on each other. There's probably not a huge amount. There's probably little character bits and pieces, but like Ireland do so much of their own detailed analysis of how a player steps, how he defends, how he positions himself, that he jokes to me would have had a good understanding of that anyway. So I don't know. I doubt he was onto the phone for 3 hours with Rowan O'Gara once they knew they were playing the All Blacks for certain to go through every little detail of it and try and come up with some plays based on that. I'm sure he'd done a lot of that himself regardless. It was a very, very strong answer from him though, and almost probably a little subtle kind of dig at what's happened with Razzy Erasmus and Felix Jones, which he's still very frustrated by and probably feels a little bit betrayed by. So yeah, I'd say there's a bit of artistic license with his answer there from Joe Schmidt.
That's diplomatic. Phil Callanan, on the topic of those two New Zealand wings, he says, I've heard various pundits refer to Bridge and Reese being weak under an aerial assault. Given their relative inexperience at test level, is that just a guess? We kind of touch upon this, obviously, in the regular pod yesterday, but I think it's an interesting question in just how it's framed, where their inexperience on the one hand could be viewed as kind of an advantage for Ireland, but on the other hand, the suggestion that particularly Reese may be a little bit positionally vulnerable, we probably haven't seen evidence of it at test level to a great degree, purely because he hasn't been involved for that long.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we did mention that in the podcast yesterday. I think I said that they're both good in the air. Their skills at going up and taking the ball are excellent. George Bridge is a really solid winger. He's very rounded. He's the kind of winger that I think Joe Schmidt would actually really like. He's excellent in the tackle. He's really good at getting up off the ground. He's played fullback, obviously, quite a bit. He's mentally robust and he's really low on his error count. I think what we had discussed, certainly what my feeling was, that they haven't been tested by a team as tactically astute as Ireland with their kicking game, a team who's really good at manipulating you to put you in a position you probably haven't been in, which they haven't really. I know the Springboks would have thought they might have got more change out of this wing pairing. We've got to underline that they did very well in that game. They are inexperienced. Johnny Sexton was actually talking about that. He was kind of bemused by people thinking it's an inexperienced backline from New Zealand, but they haven't played a lot of tests, but the ones they have are pretty high profile and they've done very well so far. And obviously going forward, they're incredible try scorers, both of them. They've both made 5 line breaks in 2 games each so far in this World Cup. There's no doubt about what they'll add in that sense, plus the energy they bring. But yeah, I do think if you're looking at putting together a game plan, you've got to ask those questions of them. And maybe they come up with really good positional play. Maybe they come up with some superb aerial takes, but you got to go and find out, don't you? You've got to put some of your strengths, which Ireland have, obviously aerially under those box kicks and with Sexton's tactical kicking game as well. You've got to test them in that area. And that might not yield productivity, but then you go to the next element of it and you test them there as well. So I think it'll be part of it, certainly. But yeah, there's no point in underestimating what those two can do. They're just absolutely lethal. How many times have we seen relatively inexperienced New Zealand wings just come up trumps and deliver fireworks in attack as well? So I would also say both of them are extremely good individual tacklers. Reese, he's absolutely smashed a few people in his couple of caps so far. I think there was one against Argentina where they were defending their try line. I can't remember which forward it was. It was one of the big back rows, maybe Matera. And he absolutely savaged him with his right shoulder to stop him dead when it looked like a try was on. He's well capable of putting in a big hit, but clearly he's learned a lot in a short space of time and it isn't as natural for him. It isn't quite as... He doesn't have that bank of experience in terms of if a team goes after him with strike plays. That probably didn't happen a whole lot to the Crusaders, I would say, this year in Super Rugby, because they often tended to dominate and kind of hog possession a little bit. So there's definitely a little bit of a question mark there, and Ireland will go after it. Look, it'll be no surprise if Reese and Bridge are well capable of stepping up to that, though.
Yeah, Una here says from the Irish point of view, we know how skillful Ringrose and Henshaw are, but it feels like they've been used to carry ball into traffic rather than use delicate touches. What can Ireland do to try and bring their skill more into the game, as I feel we'll need that against New Zealand?
Yeah, I mean, there's probably more to skill sets than just the handling. And to be fair, Ringrose's footwork has been a key skill for Ireland this World Cup. I think he's top 5 for defenders beaten maybe in this World Cup. He's been exceptional with his footwork, his ability to break the line and just give a nice quick ruck ball, because he gets outside a defender. So that's definitely one of his key skills. Henshaw, we obviously haven't seen a lot of, and I think in that small game it was very much just a case of getting him back into the game, allowing him to be probably a bit more direct with his ball carrying. You saw that one knock on, the really kind of obvious knock on where Sexton puts the ball into his hands. That's actually when he's thinking about throwing that return pass on the loop for Sexton. Probably just overthinks it slightly and it wasn't quite as fluid as it naturally would be. But they're probably the instances where they can use the handling skill. You're probably not going to see Ringrose and Henshaw throwing 20-meter passes off left and right to get to width unless there's a really glaring opportunity. But in those little intricate loop plays or shifting another channel out or bringing it forward into play, they can definitely do that. And I totally agree that they can probably get a little bit more out of that, even with Stockdale getting off his wing and running off those guys. Both of them are well capable of playing, and even with Ringrose maybe stepping in at first receiver at times when Sexton is on the ground or in a ruck or whatever, that'll be a part of it. Yeah, I don't expect them to be flinging the ball around, but I'd agree that they can probably get a little bit more out of him.
Yeah, a little bit more change. Andrew Wood says, there's always talk about Ireland being a great team, but how does Murray think the Irish players match up with New Zealand man for man? I feel we are stronger in a number of positions and that some of the New Zealand team are good players but made to look a lot better because they play with New Zealand.
Yeah, they look a lot better playing with New Zealand with other brilliant players around them, I think. I think the matchups are really good. It was interesting, actually, you asked Sam Whitelock earlier on what he makes of James Ryan, and he didn't seem to have a whole lot of detail around it. I'm not sure they quite know how good James Ryan is, but he's already in that chat about best second rows in the world. Tyke Furlong is certainly prominent in tight head terms of being the best in the world. Keane Healy, when he's at his best, is certainly amongst the finest at loose head. And then I think we can go through a lot of positions with Conor Murray and Sexton. Obviously, at times in 2019, haven't been at their peak, but when they're good, they are obviously extremely good. Johnny Sexton's the World Player of the Year. So, yeah, you could probably go through it individually, and it's very, very evenly matched. And it's just a case of Ireland putting that collectively together, because while they are excellent individuals, and that shouldn't be disregarded, particularly up front in the pack, because often a kind of cohesive pack performance kind of almost masks the brilliance of the individuals in it. But there's so much individual quality for Ireland, but when they're at their very best, it's almost kind of disguised, I would say, and they work well as a kind of machine together. So that's what Joe Schmidt will be looking for. He's not about that individualism. Obviously, it's going to be handy if Jacob Stockdale scores a nice hat trick or runs the length of the pitch off a loose ball, but they'll be very much concentrating on nailing down the things they've worked at together on the training pitch and being solid in that sense.
On the flip side of that, Jack Power asks, what are the weaknesses in the Ireland starting 15 that New Zealand are likely to exploit tomorrow? And given these, how well does our bench counter those weaknesses?
Yeah, well, I mean, if we're looking at their relatively inexperienced wings, they probably look at someone like Stockdale and say he hasn't been tested quite enough. Is his defensive decision making really at a peak? I think he's been maybe a little bit harshly criticised in that area, and guys inside him have maybe left him hanging out to dry a little bit. But I would imagine that they'll target that area of the game. And feel that it's something they can go to, especially with their wide attack. I think the fact that they feel they understand what's coming from Ireland's attack is maybe a weakness as well. They'll feel that it's going to be narrower from Ireland, that they can attack certain rucks, be clever with that, because they do obviously have some really good jackling threats in their team. And they'll feel that they can go after a couple of those rucks when Ireland do narrow up slightly. I think they'll probably think the restart is an area where they can get some change. You've seen Ireland, even actually against Samoa, they lost one there, the short restart, which New Zealand obviously excel at. And they'll want to get that possession back as early as possible, particularly if it's coming after an Irish score, and into that kind of broken situation off a restart. So there's probably a number of areas. And then there's little nuances in the line out and the kind of set piece defence, where again Ireland probably in the set piece defence have shown little frailties and getting slightly disconnected. Obviously you go back to that England game where it was really heightened there, but they'll have seen loads of evidence that they can pick Ireland apart, particularly with their kicking game and using maybe Ireland's line speed against them, learning from the last couple of times where they've really struggled against Andy Farrell's line speed orientated defence to find some space in behind as well. So I'm intrigued to see how they have put together their attacking game plan and how they've learned, I guess, from the defeats. And the November 2018 one was prime amongst them. They've made so many changes. It's crazy if you go through the team to see how different the All Blacks are now, even in the pack, and the change of focus with the props, and then the back line, as we've kind of mentioned before. It's a very different team. So I'm fascinated to see how they have plotted out their plan to take Ireland apart.
Yeah, fascinating question here from Barry Lampkin. Absolute humdinger of a question, so bear with me. But he says, this is the most talented bunch of players that we've ever had. I don't think that there's any doubt about that. As individuals, though, playing New Zealand at a World Cup is what they've dreamed of. It's what's pushed them on when they've had to struggle through selection, disappointment, injury rehab, and tough days on the pitch. Regardless of whether it's a quarterfinal or a final, it's what they've dreamed of. And because of their hard work, it's become their destiny. Do you think, though, that they will be able to embrace it in those terms and see it as 80 minutes to actually live their dream and enjoy it? Or is the pressure something that means they'll only enjoy it after the event and only if they win?
We don't know, do we? if I'm being honest, that's the answer. We don't know how they're going to react. At this point, they seem extremely calm and have all week. And Johnny Sexton again today struck me as very calm and very happy to have this opportunity, very excited. He's starting his first World Cup quarterfinal. He's never done that. Peter O'Mahony, he's in the same boat. Even key guys like that who've been around for years seemingly still have this first kind of milestone for them. Then you add in the Gary Ringrose, James Ryan kind of era, that brigade of young guys who have won so much earlier in their careers and almost expect a success. And they, again, I'm struck by their calm and confidence and a sense that the history of Irish quarterfinal defeats doesn't really relate to them in any way. And that's something Johnny Sexton said there. He said, listen, it is what it is. We can't do anything about those teams in the past. We're here right now. A lot of us are doing this for the first time and we feel that we have plenty of knockout experience, maybe not in a World Cup. He mentioned Heineken Cups. He mentioned the fact that so many guys play schools rugby where from a very early age, you're under severe pressure in a knockout circumstances. Then you go into club rugby and it's kind of similar and the Heineken Cup straight away as well. And his feeling is that this Irish team, even you look at the Grand Slam last year, that was almost like a knockout because you got to go through each step along the way. And Ireland more than held their nerve very recent time ago. So that's their sense of it. And listen, that's talk, that's words in a press conference. We just don't know how they're going to handle the pressure. Certainly the All Blacks have a sense that they are more primed to deal with that in the kind of hot, red hot atmosphere that it's going to be tomorrow. I don't know. I can't answer that question. I'm as interested as everyone else to find out about Ireland and how they handle it.
Yeah, for sure. Clodagh said that that question from Barry gave her goosebumps when she read it. And I have to say, when I was reading it initially, I kind of recoiled a little bit because I just loathe the idea of destiny being a factor in sport. But And I get it as well, even covering boxing quite often. You'll talk to a fighter who's got a world title fight coming up and they'll mention that this is their destiny to win this title. And you're kind of like, Jesus, you've got 36 minutes of essentially unarmed combat to go through before you get your hands on it. Like if you're relying on destiny, you could be in a bit of trouble. But at the same time, and by the same token, it does feel as though this game tomorrow morning is kind of the culmination of 4 years or even 6 years work and all of the toils that even us as supporters have gone through, not to mention all of the work that's been done by Joe Schmidt and that Ireland squad. So I was wondering from your perspective, even from a journalistic perspective, you've been on the beat with this team for a long time. You've done your fair share of World Cup quarterfinals now in your old age. Does it feel almost like a landmark for you even that you've been kind of essentially like on a journey of sorts with this team and now you're kind of at this point like everybody else where it does feel as though this game has been kind of coming for a long time?
Yeah, it definitely feels like that. I even writing about it this morning, just in terms of the actual rivalry with New Zealand, that's kind of been it's almost been an overarching theme in Joe Schmidt's tenure. Everything starts with that 2013 narrow loss to the All Blacks. Everything kind of stemmed from there and they learned the hard way there about nearly getting over the line. Obviously, he's a Kiwi himself. Obviously, he has always had this, I guess, reverence for the All Blacks. And he spoke really well about that yesterday, and the influence other guys have had on him. And you just know that it means, those wins meant so much to him as a New Zealander to beat the All Blacks. And yeah, to do it at a World Cup, you know, they're 2-2, him against Hansen now. It's even Stephen, and it comes down to this one. It's the decisive one before Joe Schmidt finishes up as Ireland coach. And if he can take down the All Blacks at a World Cup, that would be right up there as his best achievement. Obviously, a Grand Slam is special, but there's just something extra and heightened about a World Cup knockout game. At the same time, you're kind of wary to say that because you don't want Ireland's, if you're going to use that word, destiny, to be a quarter-final win. And then you have that same come down as they had after the France game in the last World Cup, where they go into the Argentina game and they're just spent physically and emotionally. So, I would imagine that Ireland, internally, they're not going to tell us and they're not going to speak about this, but I imagine internally that they feel their destiny, if that's the word, is to win the actual World Cup and to culminate the Joe Schmidt era with that achievement. And yeah, knocking off the All Blacks was always going to have to be part of that, really, when you looked at it. No matter where they met them, it was always going to have to be Ireland against them, and especially because you're looking for that decisive fifth game. So it is a fascinating way to head towards what, from Joe Schmidt's eyes, hopefully won't be the last game, and hopefully not the second last game, but another step along towards winning a World Cup with Ireland. That'll be his ultimate goal. And I think, like, for him, it's probably even more special than winning it with the All Blacks. It's certainly a greater achievement. The All Blacks expect to win World Cups. Ireland have never expected to win World Cups. And if they can get over the All Blacks, obviously they're taking a massive step towards potentially achieving that.
Yeah, it's set up tantalizingly. Just a couple of quick ones before we let you go. So Marcus Kay, who had the great question about Japan for the members pod the other day, he asks, the group of us that have been watching the World Cup are doing prep tonight by watching the two wins against the All Blacks. What would Murray recommend as an accompaniment?
How does he mean? In terms of beer or food or what?
To be totally honest, I'm not sure. I just started reading the question and got to the end of it. Let's say food and beer.
Oh God, I don't know. Get some Japanese food. If you're in Ireland, try and get some good sushi or gyoza or some Asahi beers or Sapporo or whatever. Get on the team of what it is now as well. It's because you can't just look back. You got to look forward. And Ireland have been underlining that and how different an All Blacks team it is. So yeah, those wins will give them that bit of confidence. But it's going to take something different, I think, this time around. So enjoy that, lads.
And one last one from Robbie. To finish on a high note, what is Ireland's winning margin going to be? Yes, Robbie.
Fair play. I think a 1-point winning margin will be more than good enough for Ireland if they're going to get over the line. Yeah, the optimism has just risen, which has been great to see. And I think it is rubbing off on the players. They're absolutely buzzing for this. The confidence is high, and listen, the Kiwis are still the favourites and deservedly so, but you'd just love to see this be a real contest. You'd love to see it go into the final quarter with the game in the balance. How thrilling would that be? And then Ireland have put themselves in that position to try and create a bit of history. So here's hoping for an absolute classic yet again between these two teams.
Here's hoping. We'll leave you go. Come here, enjoy the game, and we will catch you again over the weekend. And thank you to everybody as well who tuned in, all of the 42 members, the WhatsApp group, and everybody involved. Thanks for your questions so far. And yeah, it's going to be quite something tomorrow morning. Enjoy it if you can. And sure, we'll see you for a semi-final. But until then, take it easy.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Lowe!
Rugby weekly.
Little reverse pass.
Magic!
You're not alive, boss, so you start kicking when the room is spinning and the world...